do you want to start to this?
So Shannon and members from the committee, SDR 11 proposes an amendment to the Oregon Constitution to allow revenues from motor vehicle fuel taxes and fees to be used for policing the public highways, roads and streets, and roadside rest areas. And this proposal would go to the people for approval or rejection.
Okay. And how many sign? Where's the sign-up sheet you have yet?
They're still signing up on it.
Okay.
I can handle it real fast, so they don't need to sign up, Madam Chair.
Okay. This is Senator Hammondsville, and Senator Yee will be right back so we can vote. Would you
like?
Okay.
Madam Chair, members, I've sponsored this bill because of the serious lack of attention that we have of getting additional state troopers out on the highways and road system that we have here in Oregon. In 1979, the legislature enacted Senate Joint Resolution 7 that went to a vote of the people in 1980. And it took the state police and state parks out of the state ODOT funding. The reason for this was that Associate General Contractors at the time said, don't worry, we have enough money. The legislature concurred and said, we have enough money to always fund state police and state parks out of general fund money. A few years later, along came ballot measure 5. Then after that came ballot measure 11 and 49, 50, and any other numbers you want to recite. But the net effect is that as more and more demands were placed upon limited funding in the state general fund, then we began to see a serious decline in the state police operation of our state. Last November, Oregonians passed ballot measure 66 to fund Oregon State Parks with lottery fund money. And no one bothered to address the issue of declining state police. SCR 11, is an attempt to fund the state police in a manner that Oregonians will know, do you support law enforcement on your roads and highway structure system in Oregon? And if you do, this is what the net cost to you as a citizen is going to be. I believe Oregonians, when presented with factual documentation, will agree that the state police should be, in fact, included in this funding. My concern is that already factions are beginning to grow, and it was never my intention to put the state police 100% in the highway fund and take limited resources from the highway and use it to fund state police. My concern all along was to take additional funds generated by vehicle registration, truck registration, to go to support hiring additional troopers to actually put them on the job in the field, enforcing motor vehicle laws. That's the key to this whole process. Since in the last few days here, the governor's office has got involved now, AAA, Oregon Trucking Association, another group called Save Our Troopers, and a variety of other interests have expressed to me concerns for what we're trying to address here. Rather than running a bill out that we're all going to be spending our time beating up each other over, I would rather have the chair appoint a working group, and I would offer my services to head up that working group. And let's look at the overall issue and define a bill and design a bill that all Oregonians can come together and support on. Not Democrats or Republicans, but Oregonians come together to support the reestablishment of state police funding and not take away from limited resources in the highway fund but to find other avenues, including vehicle registration increase, and refer that to Oregonians, and then intelligently go to Oregonians and tell them what we're doing and why. I believe if a working group consisting of the Oregon Trucking Association, the AAA, Save Our Troopers, the governor's office, myself, we would be happy to try to work up some compromises so we don't have to gather in a meeting like this, spend all our time beating up each other rather than saying, how can we make it a better bill for everybody? So it's with that I ask the chair to make this consideration.
Well, I do appoint you the head, and they pick a time, and who's on it will all come to your office.
Okay.
And so people that have signed up, I only want you to sign up if you have a comment about the working group that came to testify. Otherwise, you can bring your concerns up in the working group. Is that all right? Okay, then you'll put that together and come back.
Yes.
Okay.
I'd like to set our next first meeting for sometime around 3 p.m. next Tuesday afternoon. So everybody can go ahead and write that down for our calendars and make arrangements. 3 p.m. Tuesday afternoon, we'll try to get the Democratic Caucus room upstairs on the third floor and meet in there if we can.
Okay. I'm not sure I opened, I did on SJR 11. Didn't I open it again? And I appoint you for that to that working group. And senators, on SJR 11, Senator Hammond is going to head up a working group with AAA, the truckers, the police, the governor's office, and come up with some amendments that they all could support. And Oregonians, like he said, not Democrat, Republican, but Oregonians.
Mm-hmm. I think Senator needs support.
You support that idea? Oh, that's right. No new taxes. Okay, so this closes the public hearing on SJR 11. And now I want to open a public hearing and possible work session on Senate Bill 908. And who's going to testify on 908? Can you explain that to us?
Sheriff Shannon and members of the committee, Senate Bill 908 requires gas stations to post signs indicating what percentage of gasoline prices and cost of gas and what percentage of taxes. And there is a fiscal in the packet on Senate Bill 908, and we found from our research that no state at the time mandates this, but there are states such as Texas and Colorado, but the retailers
on a voluntary basis against the certain insurers. This bill is requested by a constituent of mine, so I have a short statement in support of the bill. Madam Chair, should I present my remarks that I support this bill, or should I wait until after the conclusion?
You choose.
I'll go ahead.
Okay.
And make my statement of support.
Okay.
So, for the record, I'm State Senator Yee, representing Senate District 19. Senate Bill 908 requires the posting of gasoline taxes at every gas pump and cash register at gas stations. Currently, 24% of the price of gas is state tax, 18.4% is federal tax, and only 57.6% is the price of gas. So how many of you knew that before I told you? How many Oregon citizens know that? Everyone knows how much income tax they pay, and everyone knows how much property tax they pay. However, very few people know how much gas tax they pay. And I think it's only fair people know how much gas tax they're paying now before they consider any increases. Senate Bill 908 requires information about the government agencies to be posted in these signs also. and this will allow citizens to contact ODOT and other agencies to see how their taxes are being spent. So this bill is a truth in taxation bill, and I hope that it will hold agencies more accountable for the spending of taxes they collect. People are demanding more efficiency and accountability. Truth in taxation is a first step. And okay. I ask for your support.
You have it.
Okay.
Mike Sherlock, would you come forward? Well, two for three for one.
With your permission, Madam Chair.
That's fine. Okay. Okay. Do you both realize we have a dash one amendment?
No.
It will no longer say percentage, it will say the amount. Because as the price fluctuates, the percentage fluctuates. So that's the dash one amendment.
Oh, I see.
We have them.
Yes.
Not
mine, just the money.
Okay. Okay.
Okay. Go ahead.
Hi, my name is Mike Sherlock. I'm here today representing the Oregon Gasoline Dealers Association, and we are in opposition to Senate Bill 908. And with me is Brian Bowe, who represents the Oregon Petroleum Marketers Association. My testimony doesn't refer to the dash one, but I'll go ahead and go through it, and then we can talk about these amendments.
Would you, okay, yeah, just skip the part about the dash one, because they wouldn't have to change them.
Right. Okay. Senate Bill 908 would require signage on gasoline dispensers telling consumers what percentage of the price is for gasoline and what percentage is for taxes, and the OGDA strongly opposes the bill. The signage requirements proposed by this bill would be extremely unworkable for several reasons. We'll skip the part about the percentage on here. The signs the new law would require to be posted on dispensers would barely fit on many of today's newer varieties. Some of the newer dispensers are barely wider than the proposed minimum width of the dispenser signs, which is 11 inches. In addition, many Oregon municipalities have codes regulating the amount of outdoor signage businesses may post. These codes vary from place to place. The OGDA has voluntarily offered to make available to its members upon request signs informing consumers of the current gas tax rate. Incidentally, there have been very few takers. Bottom line is we just think that it's unnecessary and relatively unworkable. With the Dash 1 amendments, we wouldn't be as opposed, but I think the people of Oregon know what the gas tax rates are now, and it's just unnecessary to add additional signage.
Okay.
That's about all I have.
A lot of people don't, so but go ahead, Brian.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Brian Bowe, and as Mike indicated, I'm here this afternoon representing the Oregon Petroleum Marketers Association. And while we as a group rarely disagree with Senator Yee, on this particular bill, we have to very politely part company. We're opposed to this measure. And the reason is, for many of the reasons that Mike cited just a moment ago, the size and the technology and styles of the new pumps, they are consolidated in what are called multi-product dispensers, and they don't lend themselves to a lot of facage that would allow easily for these postings. The other thing that I'd like to share with the committee is that petroleum marketers and gasoline dealers are under a myriad set currently of regulations regarding postings and other record keeping. This adds simply yet another burden to them, and while we understand the intent of the bill, that it is a truth in taxation and a public disclosure measure, we question whether this is the best way to go about it, through adding yet another regulation on an already heavily regulated industry. We would prefer that the committee explore different ways that DOT might disseminate to taxpayers information about the rate of taxation on gas and how it's used. Websites, other publications that they use. We think that this would be a much more appropriate way to deal with the matter rather than coming to this little subset of business and saying, hey, we're going to slap a regulation on you. You've got to put it on there. And as I said before, the space on those new pumps is really an issue because, particularly in the Tri-County area that's under the ethanol mandate, information on ethanol has to be posted, octane rating, weights and measures certifications have to be placed there. So it really is an issue, and it does make it difficult for us. And again, while we understand the intent of the bill, we think that the way it's the direction that it's headed now is not the best one for us.
Madam Chair?
Mm-hmm.
I'm really surprised at the comments you two have made, because we were working an almost identical bill, and then when I found out that May Yee was working this one, I said there's no use doing two bills. And when we talked with your folks, and in fact I think it may have been even one of you or both of you with my staff, our understanding was that if in fact there was a variety of sizes of these signs, which are going to be prepared not at your expense but at the cost of the Department of Transportation, that you guys would be fine with finding a place to post them. And I've been into a station in Portland that posts these prices on there, and it's really a relatively big shock when you realize 24.4, 18.4, and then you hit a local tax and maybe a nickel on there, and you realize about 50 cents a gallon that you just paid for with taxes. To me, it would take a bunch of heat off of your people. And as I talked to some of the retailers, they say, we really feel the same way. People come in blaming us when a lot of it, in fact, is the taxes on the gasoline and the diesel.
Well, Senator George, you did approach us, and I talked to one of your staffers about it. The proposal that you came to us with didn't deal with the percentage, and you were talking about just cents per gallon, and I understand that. The Dash 1 amendments are a lot more reasonable as far as we're concerned, and that's what we understood that your proposal was to begin with.
Madam Chair, can I respond? I did speak to your staff and did indicate and took it to the board of directors of the OPMA and relayed back, I believe it was Craig? Yes.
Yeah.
I told Craig that that they were not in support of the concept, so I'm sorry if there was a misunderstanding there.
I didn't think you were not favoring the concept, but that this was something that, in fact, it fit the pump. If we prepared these little stickers so they would be available to, you know, because there's, how many manufacturers of pumps are there? How many styles? Probably six or seven. I've been looking at every station I pull in to see a variety. Very easy thing. Department of Transportation will work with you guys to make sure we have, you know, the stickers that match your pumps. What is the objection to it?
From our point of view, the objection, first of all, was the percentage, and I understand that's not an issue anymore. The other part of it is the size that's proposed in Senate Bill 908. Those are really large. They're about the same size as the whole face of the pumps themselves. If we had smaller stickers that were provided by DOT, we wouldn't have near the problem with it.
Madam Chair?
Yes.
You're asking for something to be provided by DOT. But if your price fluctuates like it has in the last 3 weeks, DOT would be working 24 hours a day to pump out price increases to reflect what the actual cost is. Isn't that a fair, accurate assumption?
Under the original proposal, that's true. If it was strictly a cent per gallon, it would only change every time the legislature decides to change the rate.
Flat rate regardless of how much you bump the price up?
That's correct.
So why do you want the Department of Transportation to issue the same?
Well, I guess our biggest concern was just the expense. Every time we turn around, there's an additional expense for being in our business. Everything from, you know, our air compressors, we have to license as boilers and pay an inspection fee for that. And there's just a variety of little expenses that are constantly being passed through to us, and we just oppose having the government declare that we have another expense that we have to provide.
Thank you.
Madam Chair, if I might very briefly elaborate on the question that Senator George was raising about and it's interesting to note the feedback that you've gotten from retailers, because some of the feedback that I received from our marketers was kind of the opposite, a concern about when you post the tax and the consumer then sees the difference between the tax and the street price, not understanding the mechanics and complexities of petroleum marketing, might somehow assume that the difference between the tax price and the retail price is a profit margin for a dealer or a marketer, and that in an attended served state such as Oregon is, you've got a person right there at the car that might be constantly drawn in to an angry interchange with a customer, and that person wouldn't really be capable or qualified of having explained to the customer in a way that to his satisfaction. So there was a lot of concern about that, and it might be less so if Oregon is a self-serve state, but I don't think we're going that direction anytime soon.
Okay. Madam Chair, could I do one follow-up? ODOT has suggested to us that if we're ever going to get any projects done, we might have to have an additional 47 cents a gallon on there, and that would put us at about 90 cents a gallon total tax. Would your attitude change if this tax level went up? Because obviously right now they push you over $2 a gallon.
Madam Chair, I won't comment on the tax policy, but
it would change my attitude towards wanting to let people know there wasn't me doing it.
Madam Chair, I would assume that the media would fully inform the consumers that gas
was
thank you, Madam Chair. You know, Brian, I respect you a great deal, but your ultimate thing is that if we pass this, you're going to pass it on in the form of an increase in gas by a penny a gallon to pay for signs. I mean, I didn't fall off the turnip truck yesterday. You're not going to do this out of the benevolence of your heart or because the legislature is asking you kindly to do it. Just because we pass the bill, you will do it, and you'll pass it back on to the consumers. And so you kind of remind me of Blue Cross sitting there 25 years ago when I first came to this process. And they said, well, we're opposed to mandates, but just go ahead and pass it, and we'll pass it on to our policy owners. Now they say, well, we can't pass this on anymore because it's cutting into our profit margins. And that's why I hear you guys saying is it's cutting into your profit margins. One chance of one penny a gallon for a sign is not going to cut your profit margin. I can assure you, my gas has gone up 42 cents a gallon in this city in the last 3 weeks. And they can say that refineries have burnt and OPEC has cut back and Joe Blow out there is responsible for it. But why is there such a diversity of price? Why is it $1.07 a gallon in Missouri, and it's $1.37 a gallon, $1.39 a gallon here, and I can drive you to Ashland, and it's $1.60 a gallon. I mean, you guys are heaping potential problems on your own. And when government steps in, it's usually because the voters who vote, not the owners of the oil companies who are just one vote. I listen to the majority of my voters. And I can tell you this right now. Iraq, Iran, Timbuktu, wherever, my constituents are pissed. And when they get pissed, I get pissed. And if I get a chance for some neighborhood modification for you, I'll be more than happy to institute it.
Madam Chair, Senator Hannon, I appreciate your candor, and again, to restate our concerns, in talking with the jobbers and the dealers about this bill, I didn't hear so much concerns about the price implication as I did about yet another regulatory burden, okay. But I understand.
Okay, I want to move on because I want some bills to kick out while we have a quorum.
Madam Chair?
Yes.
I have a comment about what's being proposed here. You know, if we're really into educating people about this tax, the taxes, and the whole tax issue, I think what we do in this message is provide only part of the picture, because just giving people a percentage is kind of like this number in a vacuum. I mean, you're not really showing people the whole picture of, okay, so they pay, you know, 24% of the price of gas is state tax, 18.4.
Senator, you're taking out percentage.
Oh, I'm sorry, you were going to talk about the amount.
Right.
But even if you talk about the amount, it seems to me you're only giving people half of the whole picture of what we're talking about here, and that is that that tax pays for a bunch of stuff. And it seems like you need the other picture there to really give people a, you know, if you're going to start telling them, okay, this is how much the tax is, seems like you also need to say, and this is what it pays for.
So
people can have a true picture on what they weigh there. Okay, I do pay this amount of tax. This is what I get for it. Do I agree with that or not? And then you're giving people a fair picture of what it is you're getting at. If you just tell them a number that's in this kind of vacuumous, you know, vacuum, it's sort of meaningless. And of course everybody's going to go, oh, gee, I pay that much? Huh, I wonder if I need to. they could get on the other side of the picture and say, yeah, it pays for all of the stuff that we get every single day, then I think that people have a different perspective on what it is, you know, they're paying for. So I understand the intent here is to help people understand, you know, what they are paying, but let's also tell them then what they get for that. And then I think you're really giving people good information.
Thank you. I'm not sure we really want to do that because when they learn how little goes to roads, they might be more upset at the poor gas pump.
In response to Senator Castillo.
Okay, but I want to move. Mm-hmm. Okay.
I just want to say that's why the sign will say which agency is collecting the money.
Right.
And that's why they can call the agency for more information.
Okay.
Are you ready to go to work session?
Yes. And so, yeah, we're in work session.
Madam Chair, I would move the amendment identified in Senate Bill 908-1 LC3931 dated 4-1-99. It would just delete the percentage and insert the amount on line 10 or 9, 10, 11, and 12 of the bill.
Is there any objection? Okay. So we'll move. There was one more amendment on line 7. Senator Yee is willing to take out and gas pump. So you put a comma after register and delete and gas pump. This way there'd be one big sign outside, or large, it says. I don't know.
Large.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, large. And then by the cash register.
Madam Chair, for clarity, this line 22 and 23 indicates to me that Department of Transportation would, in fact, supply these signs to the dealers?
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
That's correct. Okay.
Madam Chair?
Yes?
I would move then that the committee on line 7 delete the word and gas pump and insert the comma after register
Is there any objection?
What about a small sign on line 21? It shall be approximately 8.5 inches by 11. That goes to the cash register.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so we don't need to adjust
okay,
that.
Okay, delete the and gas pump on line 7.
Okay, is there any objection? So moved. I just want one little comment. I saw at many service stations signs made during a gas tax, raising a gas tax in Marin County, and service stations just did this, you know, by their own. Is this really you want ODOT to do this? Couldn't somebody...
Well, if it's going to be uniform, it probably needs to be ODOT and get around the issue that the dealers have of putting their own...
I just don't want a fiscal pressure there, but it goes to your feet.
You take care of fiscal.
Okay. Okay.
It would be nice. I would think we'd want ODOT to say something about this, and also I'd like to find out how much it is going to cost to do this. I mean, we're talking about all of these unmet needs around our state. We can't, you know, fix all the roads we have, and we're way, way behind in projects, and then we're going to ask ODOT to spend money on these signs. I'd like to know how much, you know, what are we not going to fix in order to provide these signs?
There's a fiscal in the back.
What's the back of your pocket?
Mm-hmm.
The topic that we provide for.
What is the fiscal impact?
It's 4,000.
$674,000 for the biennium, and then $64,000 in projected into the next biennium.
Madam Chair, does this have fiscal equivalency?
Let's do it.
I think we better refer this to. Ways and means.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Yes.
And change your motion. Okay.
Madam Chair, I would move Senate Bill 908 as amended to the Joint Committee on Ways and Means.
Okay. Is there discussion? Clerk will call the roll.
Senator Castillo?
Aye.
Senator George?
Aye.
Senator Hannah?
Aye.
Senator
Meade? Aye.
Senator Shannon?
Okay, then I haven't received the unanimous vote. It will go to Ways and Means, Senate Bill 908. And there's people who have to leave, so I'm going to open up a hearing and possible work session on Senate Bill 1228. And who is to testify? Okay, do you want to come up? Oh, go ahead and read it to us.
Senate Bill 1228 creates additional hall identification requirements that include a variety of different things that our testimony will go over. And it also allows any peace officer to act on behalf of the State Marine Corps, allows the peace officer to hold a vote for hall identification and disclosal if the hall identification has been altered or made.
Okay, you want to come and testify? It's Paul Donifer and Sheriff John Reichel.
Whatever.
Go ahead.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Members of the committee, I'm Paul Don Heffner, Director of the Marine Board. The Marine Board is in strong support of Senate Bill 1228. It addresses some deficiencies in current law with respect to the test of boats and associated equipment. We work closely with the Oregon State Sheriff's Association Marine Affairs Committee, which is chaired by Sheriff Reichel, in the drafting of the bill. Very briefly, it does three things. First, it allows peace officers to act on behalf of the Marine Board. So it inserts that language several places because right now they act as agents of orders, but they're not included in the law. Second, it allows a peace officer to hold a vote for identification and disclosure if the hull identification number or the HIN number or component identification numbers are removed. The hull identification number is a number issued by the United States government, by the U.S. Coast Guard, and it's a number that's equivalent to a vehicle identification number, or VIN, which I'm sure the committee is familiar with in terms of motor vehicles. But this is the hull identification is the counterpart of that for vessels. And the third thing that it does is clarify which identification numbers, in other words, the HIN number, is needed for boats to conform with federal law. So it's making some changes that bring state law into conformance with Coast Guard rules and regulations over hull identification numbers. That very briefly is what it does. I can go into more detail if you'd like, but in short, that's what the bill's about.
No, I don't have questions. Go ahead, Sheriff.
Senator Chair, Senator Gonzalez. My name is John Reichel. I'm a Placid County Sheriff, and I represent the Oregon State Sheriff's Association Marine Affairs Committee. I don't have anything additional to add to what Mr. Don Effner said, with the exception that I do want to make it clear that it was stated that this is an additional HIN number, and the manufacturers now already have to comply with this nationwide. This is just bearing an Oregon law and conformance to the national level. And the cleanup of the language to allow any peace officer rather than agents of the Marine Board is very helpful to the enforcement issue. These changes do nothing to impact the boat users as long as they're law-abiding.
Okay. Thank you. Any questions? Do you want to move it? Okay, Senator
Madam Chair, is there any amendments that are required on this?
I didn't see any. Does anybody in their packet see any?
Madam Chair, I would move Senate Bill 1228 to the full Senate with a due pass recommendation.
Is there any discussion? The clerk will call the roll.
Senator Castillo?
Aye.
Senator George?
Aye.
Senator Hannon?
Aye.
Senator Heed?
Aye.
Sheriff Hannon?
Aye. Okay, it passes unanimously, and it's Senator Dukes' bill, so I will have her carry it. Thank you. Close work session on Senate Bill 1228. I hope I can do this while people are here. Senate Bill 860 will open public hearing and possible work session on Senate Bill 860. Do we have a sign-up sheet? Okay. Okay, everybody come. Yeah. And I just ask that you state your case as quickly as possible because I have committee members that need to go to other committees. and I'd like us to...
Madam Chair, for the record, my name is Al Elkins. I'm the director of the Oregon Post Office Association. Senate Bill 850 is a bill that we have requested. It addresses an issue that we are confronted with every day. And before you, you have the Dash 1 amendments. Those amendments basically change the bill to say that we as an industry will be responsible for picking up any vehicle debris except for liquids, fluids, and gas. It is the belief of the board of the Oregon Tow Truck Association that we are an industry that is an accident waiting to happen. We enjoy our working relationship very much with the cities, the counties, and the state officials on our highways, and we all work our highways together as a team. But in the past 2 years, as our resources for the states and counties have diminished, their help on the highways has diminished as well with us, and we are time and time again being required to clean up incidences from accidents, antifreeze, oil, gas, and transmission fluids that are basically pollutants by themselves, but mixed together they are sometimes called a hazardous substance, or even can be referred to as hazardous materials. We have three concerns with the working environment that we are now working in. One of them is having to clean up the scene. Our concern is that with the federal and state laws that are out there, we are not really aware, and we are aware that we are breaking laws, and we are concerned that this is an ongoing process. The second concern we have is the condition that the scene is in when we leave it. We approach the cleanup scenes armed with kitty litter and a broom. We do the best we can as cleanup artists that are not trained, but do we really clean up the roads and highways the way they should be? If an accident occurs because we did not clean up our scene properly, we are liable, and we know that. I might add here, as incidentally, that we are also being required to clean up in the vehicles themselves from the medical teams that are on the scenes of accidents, as well as the hazmat teams that are on the scenes of accidents, materials that are left in the vehicle, such as absorbent pads, bloody gloves, bloody gauze, and sometimes needles. That is a concern for us. The third reason, and I think one of the biggest concerns that we have, is disposing of the material that we collect. I can assure the committee today that we do not dispose of the material in a way that it should be disposed of. Once we mix the gas, the oil, the antifreeze, or any combination of the materials that I've spoken to you earlier about, we have created a substance that we've been told can be hazardous or classified even as a hazardous material. We cannot get insurance companies to insure us for cleaning up spills. We have one tow company, gentleman to my left here, Dale Johnson with Speeds Road 1, is trying to get insurance that would allow his drivers to be trained and to clean up at scenes. We cannot, they cannot, and have been told they cannot get insurance to do so. Our solution is a simple one that the cities, counties, and the state puts together similar programs like the City of Salem has, where they have their own hazmat response teams that come out and clean up the scenes of accidents, no matter how big or small the spills are. In conclusion, Madam Chair, for time's sake, I'd just like to say that this is a great concern of the Oregon Tow Truck Association, and we do need your help. Thank you. We appreciate being here today, and we're glad to answer any questions. I brought some real people with me today, so they are the technocrats, and be glad to answer any questions you might have.
Do you have questions? Okay. So then the cities would be responsible because they have trained people, is what you're saying, in counties, or on a state highway, a state hazmat team?
Yes. Whatever system or solution, Madam Chair, that would be correct. The City of Salem has a hazmat team that comes out, cleans up the scenes, no matter how big or small. We could see the state and...
Okay, I'm going to ask a question. If there were, like, needles in the car left, the hazmat team would be responsible in the city of Salem instead of the tow truck operators?
It's my understanding that they do clean that up now. Yes, that is correct.
Okay.
That's what I've been told.
Okay. Well, then if there's no questions, we'll hear from the next one. Okay. Thank you. Thank you for being here. Kurt Curtis? Why don't the other three of you come up as a panel? There you go. That's Jake, Dave, or Dave Barenberg. And we'll hear the other side of the story. Well, Kurt, you're neutral.
Yes.
Okay. All right. Are you neutral, David?
No.
Okay. You're opposed. Are you for it? No, against. Okay. And ODOT, where are you, ODOT?
Chair Shannon, Doug Tindall, the maintenance engineer from the Oregon Department of Transportation, the commission has not taken a position on this bill for Oregon.
Okay. That doesn't necessarily mean you're neutral there.
Chair Shannon, it means that ODOT has not taken a position
for Oregon. Not taken a position. Okay.
No,
he isn't. From Salem. She lives more than 100 miles. Okay, go ahead. Whoever wants to go first, let's go. Okay, Kurt.
Chair Shannon, members of the Senate Transportation Committee. My name is Kurt A. Curtis. I'm a sergeant with the Oregon State Police Patrol Services Division. My purpose in being here today is twofold. As a member of the Oregon State Police, to bring some information that we see that needs to be brought before the committee, and also as a person that deals with the tow associations and the towers that are regulated by our non-preference tow rotation list. And the concerns that have been expressed to you before are valid concerns that have been expressed to me at many of the meetings. I don't know how it's going to be resolved with regards to state activity or so forth. Part that I need to bring to your attention, though, is the fact that they have been providing a service and, yes, possibly been going into gray areas that have put them in violation with regards to their own employees and health hazards and so forth. We do look at a possible fiscal impact for state police as a minimum of around $175,000 to $200,000, and that's based on extra time that an officer may be at the scene for a third-party responder to come out to do the cleanup portion of it, to seal the vehicle off, seal the leaks, absorb the materials, or whatever is necessary. And that is also going to be passed on to the motoring public because of the traffic congestion and not being able to go through for a possible additional time they may be delayed for that response team. It's nice that we have metropolitan areas that do have hazmat teams that can respond fairly quickly, but when we look at rural Oregon where those teams may not be readily available or it may be a volunteer fire service that has to respond, there's additional time delays that may come from that. And so we project that there may be additional delays also with officers tied up at scenes. And this would refer back to even the most minor scenes anytime that we have any type of leakage of the materials of gasoline, oil, or anything upon the roadway, or possibly that may interfere with the waterways for Oregon. Got a little ahead of myself there, Kathy.
I want to ask you a question.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it's way out the country, but I'm sort of in the country. Don't the volunteer fire folks show up at all these accidents anyway? They sure run up and down the road.
Sure, Shannon, that would be dependent on whether or not they got a call, if it's an emergency or a medical injury or a need for a fire agency to be there. For minor accidents and that, where you have a fender bender collision, there may not even be law enforcement or anybody notified. That's just somebody has an accident, they realize they don't want to report it, don't want to bother the police, they call a tow service and then have their car towed back into the scene or back into a repair shop. So this could even be on the most minor of accidents, anytime that we have a leakage or a situation like that, that we have to have a third party come out to respond. If we have oil or other fluids on the roadway and that, if we allow traffic to flow through, there's a possibility, especially in our rainy weather, where that oil mixing and becoming a hazard to traffic because of the slipperiness of it.
Go ahead.
Traffic substances typically just found in urban areas?
Well, for some, Senator Shannon, Senator Hanna, excuse me. The fluids that we're talking about are those that battery acids, transmission fluids, gasoline, oil,
and the debris that would come from an accident itself.
So there'd be nobody to clean the battery acid up?
It would be dependent on the resources of the community, sir.
Okay, but if you took the role of the tower, and you were in the tower's position and the tower was in your position, do you feel like requesting or directing a tower to do something beyond just towing the wrecked vehicle away?
Senator Shannon, Senator Hannon, with regards to this issue, as I say, it's a valid concern that they have. I've talked with DEQ, I've talked with OSHA with regards to this on the phone. They're really not given any position other than the fact they say these materials have to be cleaned up. Somebody has to be responsible for cleaning those materials up. If there were other alternatives that the state had, such as training or disposal sites or something that they could provide to assist the towers in that, I'd be all for that. I can't see that we're in a position, and that's why I say we're neutral, that we're demanding that they clean up these materials that may be hazardous to them. They've taken it on, as they testified before, the last 2 years they've been doing this with their kitty litter, cleaning up as best they could. And we've kind of let that be the result. But as more and more of these materials go through and more restrictions go on, it's more and more restrictions that are placed upon these entities that respond to the scenes.
And you have potential toxic chemicals in Eastern Oregon as much as you do in the urban valleys here in Western Oregon. My point I'm trying to make is somebody in Brothers, Oregon running the wrecker, why should they go out and clean up all the stuff on the toxic materials? They don't have the proper outfits and which to wear. They don't have the oxygen mask and everything else that is required to have. So I'm just trying to be the devil's advocate for a moment and look the other side of the coin. I wouldn't want to be out there just using kitty litter and the brush to clean up something that's real toxic.
Senator Shannon, Senator Hannah, I agree with you wholeheartedly. And if we had people that were trained throughout the state that could respond to these situations with all the proper gear, I'd be all for it.
Thank you.
Yeah, go ahead.
And Senator Hannon, I've noticed that you're the chief sponsor of this bill, so I want to be supportive here, and I'm just kind of wondering, this seems like a kind of a complicated issue we have here, because I very much agree with the truckers that I would have very serious concerns about, or the tow truck guys, about, you know, what they're having to face today, and then I understand what you're saying about putting more workload on you and costing the state police more money, so I'm wondering if we should try and put together some kind of, I don't know, workload.
Well, he just agreed.
Oh, okay.
That we will do it. Will you be in charge of putting it all out of your office again? Okay. But I think that's the best. Yeah, and you can put them right in the, and come back with an amendment we can all live with. Okay. Thank you. Okay, then we will close the public hearing on Senate Bill 860.
Thank you.
Okay. I have, wonderful. I sent them all. Senator Fisher is going to come here. I guess he's at a doctor's appointment, but at 6, at 4:30. So I'm going to open a public hearing on Senate Bill 757. We have to sign out.
Shannon, members of the committee, Senate Bill 77 establishes highway construction fund and specifies uses for the monies in the fund. It requires all the federal monies made available for transportation purposes that may be used for highway construction be it deposited into the highway construction fund.
Okay, I think Gary George had a presentation. What happened to it? Okay, we're just moving on. Senator George, did you want to start this hearing?
Okay, if I could, thank you.
Okay.
Something didn't even need me, did you?
Nope.
You have to do okay.
I don't know. It just has some. I'll just start saying it.
Okay.
What are you going to do?
I had some quotes from Muir and then also Bob Dickey, and if I could, I'll let them go ahead and begin. I would like to at this time put one slide up, and I'll probably just leave it there. They're beginning. And,
just a second, Senator George. Just in case Senator Fisher doesn't get back from his doctor's appointment, I want to have a public, I'm going to close this public hearing and open a public hearing on Senate Bill 908. Will you just that bill? Yes. All right, 652. Excuse me. Open a public hearing on Senate Bill 652 because it has to have had one hearing. It's just very brief. I'm just going to tap it in. Oh, I'm sorry. I'm just going to tap it in case he doesn't get there. Okay.
Chair Shannon and members of the committee, Senate Bill 652 authorizes wreckers to tow abandoned vehicles and authorizes police agencies to hire wreckers for such towing. And it provides that if one towing business agrees to do all the abandoned vehicle tows, other towing businesses will not be removed from a location list for other tows.
Okay. This closes the public hearing on Senate Bill 652. We'll go back to a public hearing on Senate Bill 757, and I'm sorry for the interruption.
That's okay. The one slide that I'm going to put up right now will probably apply to everything that's going to be said. And kind of
do identify yourself.
I will certainly.
All right.
Madam Chair, this is State Senator Gary George, District 2.
Okay.
You're talking about Senate Bill 757. Remember that because that's a really world-class aircraft, the future of transportation. That's what we're talking about here today, too.
We don't need those.
All right.
We're going there.
Can everybody come on up? Where do you want to go for Bob? You want to send these first?
Okay.
Would you provide the committee copies of this? Senator George? All right. I don't know if I can or not. Okay. That's good. All right. You have to speak loud enough so the mic will pick you up.
No, I'm finished. I'm going to have to.
Well, just run through it real quick, the slide, real quick.
And I'm sure what this is, these numbers were achieved several different sources.
Why don't you come to a microphone? Oh, you have to have your pointer, don't you? Yeah. Yeah.
All right.
It won't stretch. Okay.
Madam Chair, these numbers, the reason that we use 1982 until 1995 is because these are the numbers that match the governor's study on growth and growth management. And from that, we were able to achieve a couple of numbers. That's the first two numbers, 18% population growth, but a 59% vehicle mile travel number. And what we did is we took a look at gas collections for that period of time, 82 to 95, found a 378% increase. We had fiscal run the CPI 65%, leaving a net 313% gas tax increase over that period of time, 82 through 95. And the net effect during that period of time, numbers from NODOT, was a 90.5 mile reduction in overall road miles in the state controlled by ODOT, and a 300% increase in congestion. And that's kind of the father, those numbers are the father of this bill. That's where the ideas began to develop.
Okay, thank you.
And Tom George will send us copies.
We want copies of that. Okay. And you got, it shows where you got that information from.
From ODOT letter, that number there, and the legislative fiscal motor vehicle fuel revenue, that number and this number.
Okay, thank you. Go ahead, Dave.
Thank you, Senator Shannon, Chair Shannon, and Senators. My name is Dave Hogeberg. I live in McMinnville, Oregon. For about the last 11 years, I've been employed primarily in in public transportation projects in many capacities in terms of both in Yamhill County and the metropolitan area and serving on committees here in Salem. I have a sideline where I practice law when I have some time that's left, and that seems to be diminishing. Senator George asked me to talk to this committee about Senate Bill 757, and I would, if I could, try to take a piece of paper and perhaps breathe some life into it about what it really means in terms of those of us in Yamhill County. And I think to do that, I need to go back a ways. If you look in the bill, it talks about the STIP, the Statewide Transportation Improvement Program, and I don't need to talk to all of you about that and the projects that are on that list and how the funding moves forward and the time frame. But when I started in 1988, we were talking about the traffic congestion in Newburgh and Dundee on Highway 99W and then on 18 on to the Central Oregon coast, a highway of regional significance in Oregon. And as part of that, I suggested to people in Newburgh and Dundee that in 10 years we'd drown in traffic. And when you saw Senator George's slide that talks about 300% increases in congestion, those are the kinds of things that you're seeing happening. And yet there aren't any provisions being made to address or to resolve those transportation projects in the nature of new construction that will really address downtown Newburgh and downtown Dundee that are just drowning in traffic. And they can talk to you about that for a minute. So we were on the stick in terms of the Newburgh-Dundee project in the early 90s. Went back off because of some funding issues. Did do a reconnaissance study. Got back on. Then in about 1993 or 4, we got dropped off because of what ODOT did at that time. They looked at their resources, the projects on the STIP, and they didn't match, and so we went off again. Well, undaunted, two sessions ago, the people of Yamhill County created what was then called Senate Bill 626, which you now know as the state tollway legislation, and came to this very committee and talked about a way to develop projects that would bring some of their own funding with them to move critical construction projects forward. And we did that. It was passed. Since then, two more projects have been added. Let me tell you what those are. The original bill included the Newburgh-Dundee project located in Yamhill County, a project in Washington County that would run from about Sherwood over to I-5, the Tualatin Expressway, if you would. Since then, the legislature has added some form of a project in the metropolitan area in Portland and a new bridge at Longview and Rainier. So those are the four projects in that bill. Well, what's happened is we all continue to address these critical needs. You've got a statewide transportation improvement plan, and really nothing is going forward on that. And this is an attempt by the senators who have sponsored it and a lot of people to say we need to make commitments for state improvements to needed transportation projects, new construction. We've got that list of a big backlog of projects, and really nothing is going forward. You know, it's fine to talk about other forms of transportation and transit and so forth, but that doesn't work very well when you have people going from the through Newburgh, through Dundee, for all kinds of purposes, many different places. They're going to the coast and so forth. It's not a metropolitan area like in Portland. So we are supporting efforts to find a way to start to fund transportation construction. And you'll note that in the bill that it deals with that subject, and my charge as chair of the Yamhill County Transportation Committee is to work with the legislature and to try to accomplish just that. So we would be happier. I would be happy to answer any questions, but I know that you're very busy. You have a short schedule, and you have a couple of other people, but it would be interesting when you look at a bill like this, perhaps to hear from the people in Newburgh and Dundee of what it's done to their communities today. And we're disturbed with us. I was sorry Senator Dukes wasn't here. She is more frustrated than Lee. I mean, Senator Dukes has been working diligently for a bypass project in Astoria for longer than we have been working in Newburgh and Dundee intensively, although our efforts go back a long time. And she has run into exactly the same time. She's been on and off the skip so many times, she probably can't count it herself. We think you need to set aside dollars that go specifically to new construction, and that's what this is about. Thank you.
Yeah,
Chair Shannon and members of the committee, my name is George Willis. I'm the city administrator in Dundee. I sit in a rather hot spot. I'm not from the standpoint of temperature, but it is City Hall in Dundee that receives probably a response a day from travelers trying to travel through our community in terms of they want some place to vent their frustration over the congestion, the accidents, and the problems created by the traveling public. Well, the traveling public only represents one side of the coin. Dundee is a community of 2,800 people. Highway 99W basically bisects the population in the geographical area of the city. In any one given year, our police department and fire department will respond to about 150 accidents in a five-mile stretch, and the residents of the community, in terms of expressing their views, come to the city council with the perspective that on weekends, on Friday nights, Saturdays, and Sundays, they feel unsafe to venture out of their homes. Now, with that perspective, I bring greetings to you from the mayor and city council in Dundee, and also a word that they do take time and the opportunity to review legislation. And they voted 7-0 at a city council just recently to support the concept of the development of a highway construction fund. It was Representative Lokenspell in terms of the accountability bill. And in discussing this bill with the mayor and the terminology, recognize that there are similarities, and the city council asked me to express their support for this bill. The bill does contain some aspects that we think may weaken it somewhat, and I won't go into... I won't speak to the one aspect of the bill. I'll say that for Anne. But in Section 3, Subsection 2, there is a process which Mr. Hardeber already described in terms of the STIP process. We think that the federal funds that flow to the state of Oregon for highway construction should be dedicated to the projects on the STIP.
That is a novel idea, because each city and county lobbies Congress for the federal funds, and the legislature feels funny being project specific, that if it would go in to be able to complete the STIP, then it wouldn't be the legislature picking projects, because it would have gone through the process. That's a great idea.
Well, it's unfortunate that certain cities and counties, and usually the larger cities and counties, feel that they have to go to the federal level in order to get a response in terms of construction projects.
Well, there is a lot of money coming from the federal.
Yes.
So they might as well give it in their neighborhood.
Yeah, and I would like to speak to the issue of the potential loss of federal funds to cities and counties over specific projects. Maybe with the adoption of this bill and the introduction of prioritization and project planning and the development of a list that local governments and citizens can take a great deal of confidence in, that maybe the decision-making process for how projects are built will be left at the state level, and we won't have to go to the federal government to ask for earmarks for specific projects.
Okay. But, okay. And Anne, you want to go ahead? As quick as possible. Thank you.
Madam Chair and members of the committee, my name is Anne Pasol. I'm the Executive Director of the Newburgh Area Chamber of Commerce. One of the things that George was just referring to, a couple of things that the Senator just handed me, in Section 2, Number 2, the Department of Transportation shall deposit into the Highway Construction Fund all monies made available by the federal government for transportation problem purposes that may, and we think that word should be will.
Now, was that what line?
That would be on line 11 at the very last word.
That will be used.
for highway construction without endangering receipt of federal monies. That also is a very important sentence.
Yes, because we do, I'm not sure about this, but there's potentially a problem because the federal government spends their money the way they want to once they take it from us. So.
That's true. The point I wanted to make as far as my testimony here is that our chamber is in support of this bill, Senate Bill 757. I have a kind of a practical analogy that I think this bill applies to, and that is in our chamber we have what's called a business school partnership grant program. We have specifically put that program into a separate bank account. We have to be accountable because this money comes in from the business district. It is then funded out to individual school projects. We feel that this is a much cleaner accountability and efficiency of our reporting back to the business community that has supported the fund. And I think that's what this particular bill is attempting to do as well, is just make a clear accounting of federal money that comes in or any kind of construction money that is dedicated, and it's set specifically into a fund that is clear to see where the money's come from and where it goes out for, specifically for new construction.
Okay.
Thank you. Thank you for your testimony on this bill. I do have a question. I understand what you're saying about this bill, but what do you say then to communities who do like using those federal funds for projects other than the highway funds? They find other projects that, as a community, they have decided to make a priority, and they've decided to use some of that funding for other projects. What are you going to say to those communities? You're taking away that ability in this bill of other communities to make those kinds of decisions with those federal funds. Because I know that they have, you know, because we have such tight restrictions on how we use our highway funds, that some of the federal funding has a lot more flexibility attached to it. And so that flexibility is the only source stream of funding that some communities have for trying to develop other types of transportation modes. And so what happens with that effort by local communities who decide that that's a priority for them?
In terms of a planning process statewide for projects in terms of transportation related, the STIP process is the single level playing field. And if they have a project in their community that they would like to see funded, I think it should compete at the same level in terms of the public presentations and the discussions and the working groups to include it in the state.
But you're restricting the use of that money just for highways.
Well, this is Senator Shannon, Senator Castillo. I think part of the answer is, let me give you an example. We went back to Congress and asked Congress to, through the offices of Congressman First, to assist in the funding of the environmental study for the Newburgh-Dundee Improvement Project.
Mm-hmm.
And when that was approved in Congress in their last Surface Transportation Act, they approved $375,000, but it was specifically earmarked for the environmental studies on this project. And I dare say we can't do anything in this bill that will change what Congress does when they specifically identify projects for specific community funding. These are really the undedicated dollars that aren't project specific, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
But if Congress says it's going to be used for Newburgh-Dundee for a particular purpose, this bill, I don't believe, changed it, nor do I think that we could.
You don't think it would interfere with civil?
Legislative council and others would be better to opine on that, but knowing the federal preemptions, I think that probably we couldn't change that if we tried.
Okay. Well, just a second, though. Senator Castillo,
mm-hmm.
I still think that money that comes in at the state level, what you're trying to say is that the ODOT may want to give it to a community for transit, and this says that they can't, right? It's
Oh, it doesn't. Okay. Okay, then the other thing that, okay, you brought up something I was going to clarify about, oh, like if a community wanted to do something with transit, that wouldn't be in the STIP, would it?
Correct, because that wouldn't be funded out of gas tax dollars.
Yeah. What?
That wouldn't be funded out of gas tax dollars, so it probably wouldn't be in the...
Yeah.
You'd have to have other funding.
Isn't that what you were referring to, Senator Steele? If they wanted to do transit or rail or
something. Yeah, or some other, or, you know, whatever else a community decided they wanted to do to meet the needs of their transportation needs in their community, and it didn't, and it wasn't directly into highways.
It could be in the
city. Restrict local communities from making those kinds of decisions if that's what they decide they want to do in their community.
Mm-hmm. Madam Chair, if I can address that, I have
okay.
my showing
back page
on the STIP
and indicating
$414 million in the STIP that is transit designated.
Okay.
Okay,
then Mr. Benke, you
want to
go ahead?
Thanks. My name is Bob Benke. I'm a transportation consultant. I live at 11895 Southwest Burnett Lane in Beaverton. And I have a handout here. That deals with the recent report card produced by the Oregon Progress Report, and the Governor Kitzhaber is the chairman of it. There's about 80 or so benchmarks that deal with how well we forecast where we'd be in the year 2000, and this gives a forecast after about 7 or 8 years how well we're doing. And the first three really have to do with alternative forms of transportation other than the single-occupant automobile. And the benchmarks that were set back in the early 1990s for the year 2000, it says that in terms of how we're doing against reducing congestion with our emphasis on alternative modes, we got an F. The percentage of Oregonians who commute by methods other than a single-occupant automobile, we get a D-. And our ability to reduce the number of vehicle miles traveled per capita, we get an F. And it says the percentage of state roads that are in fair or better condition, we get an A. And the percentage of Oregonians living where air meets government standards, we get an A. And, you know, this, I think what I'm trying to show here is that this committee, headed by the governor, says that our alternative transportation policy is not working very well. And that the proposals now to use some money to raise gas taxes because our highways are going to hell in a handbasket, just doesn't, not supported by a lot of data. The second part of the sheet here was a letter I recently received from Andy Cotugno, who heads the transportation director for Metro. And Metro has getting some federal money coming in. I think they have approximately, seems to be about $75 million totally available. And as part of cutting down the various wish lists that have been proposed by various jurisdictions in the metropolitan area, they have narrowed it now down to about $125 million in projects. And that's on the third sheet here. And if you look on the third sheet with this of the projects, I tried to break them out into categories. And the first four are the only categories that really have something to do with adding capacity to highways. So if you look at the first four projects, which are called road modernization, road reconstruction, that represents about 28.7% of the dollars that are available. The remaining amount of money is spent on things, on alternative kinds of transportation. The word boulevard is putting medians in and landscaping and bike paths and a number of other kinds of activities. And the other projects that are listed down here, the priorities within Metro on available federal funds is very clearly away from the automobile and increasing the capacity of our roadway network, and very heavy onto this alternatives program, which doesn't appear to be working very well. And I have some other examples. Now, the situation is far worse than this, because if you go in to look at the projects under road modernization and road reconstruction and bridge rehabilitation, you find that many of those projects have significant things about adding new bike paths, adding landscaping, adding median strips, restriping, taking lanes away, and you can't get a straight answer of how many lane miles of capacity have been added to the road network in the Portland metropolitan area after we spend this $125 million. It looks to me at the maximum we're talking about 2 lane miles of new highways, you know, if we spent the whole $125 million. And the rest of it is going to other things, which may be nice to have, but since Portland has the fastest growing traffic congestion on the West Coast, it seems to me that the monies are now being directed towards a whole bunch of projects that are not doing anything really to reduce traffic congestion very much. At a recent House hearing on the proposed gas tax increase, Chris Hagerbaumer from the Oregon Environmental Council, who I believe is in the audience, testified that the Surface Transportation Policy Project that Grace Brunican used to head up said that 92% of Oregon's urban and suburban highways are in less than good condition. Quote, giving Oregon the dubious honor of ranking last among states on how it protects its urban and suburban road infrastructure. Fiscal responsibility demands that we fix our crumbling roads and bridges before spending money on new capacity. Well, you know, at the same time this testimony is coming out, the University of North Carolina at Charlotte produced a report that evaluates state transportation systems around the country. And they moved Oregon from the 19th best state highway network to the 8th best. And the reason was because we've made such great improvements statewide in the condition of our pavement and the condition of our bridges. As a matter of fact, if you only look at the condition of our bridges and our pavement statewide, we're the 4th best in the United States at the present time. And although there's a slide presentation was made the same day for the House Transportation Committee showing every sinkhole in Oregon for the past 25 years, preferably with trailer trucks sticking out of them, and we heard all sorts of testimony that unless we fix our crumbling road infrastructure, chaos is going to happen. We find that the University of North Carolina has been doing this study for 10 years, says that we have a wonderful job. The only reason we're not ranked 4th is because our cost of maintaining the highway is much higher than the national average. And the amount of money that we spend on administrative costs per mile of highway, we're one of the worst in the country. Last year, we ranked 49th out of 50, and this year we're down to around 45 or 46, the 6th worst in the country. We spend so much money on administrative activities and not putting the money into highways. And so I think this Senate bill that Senator George has introduced, I think is a way of saying, wait a second, we have to establish some priorities. There are some federal monies that are available you can't use to build new highways. Some of the CMAQ money, which is congestion management and air quality money, we're not talking about that money. That money can be used for a whole variety of other activities. But the money that can be used to add capacity to highways, you know, is now being drained off for a whole bunch of other activities. And at least in the Portland area, I think it would rescue us from a bunch of well-intentioned people who are completely going in the wrong direction because they constantly try to emphasize big buses and light rail type solutions where it's inappropriate. Most people in the Oregon metropolitan area live and work in low-density areas. And I have document after document from the federal government that says big buses and light rail don't make economic sense when you're in low-density areas. For example, I live in Beaverton. Let me give you a case in point here. I live in Beaverton. And if you look at the new West Side Light Rail, which we're using $20 million a year of lottery money for the next 20 years to support, if you look at the segment between Beaverton and you look at the segment between Hillsborough and you look at the projections that were made by Metro and TriMet, for every additional car that takes off the road over and above the all bus system which was there beforehand, it's going to cost $140,000 a year to take a car off the road. I mean, this is where the money is going at the present time. It's inappropriate. Many of the things that the money is being spent for are inappropriate. And I hope that there can be some constraint to add, you know, if our major problem in the urban areas, as the Oregon Environmental Council has pointed out, is we have poor infrastructure, who is to blame for it when you start spending your money on all sorts of other things?
I'll ask you a question, Mr. Van Kate. Okay. Let me to move. On this third page.
Yes.
That money, that $125.504 million.
Yes.
Some of that must be federal, all that transfer.
It's all federal.
It's all federal.
It's all federal.
Okay, it's all federal. Okay, so it's not, we're not talking about gas tax.
No, we're not. And if you look on the preceding pages, maybe it doesn't show it. There's another chart that I have someplace else. There's a category down on the bottom on page 3, Madam Chair. If you look at the transportation enhancement, $4.9 million, and this is something that ODOT's going to look at. They're the ones that are primarily responsible for that. Of the $4.9 million, I believe a little over $2 million is to improve a historical district in Portland's neighborhood, which is called Kenton, which is the proposed terminus of the north-south light rail line at one point in time. And assuming another $500,000 is to repair the courthouse at Pioneer Square.
Transportation dollars?
Yes, these transportation dollars. So it seems to me that the bill that Senator George has proposed here is something that will provide some safeguards that, you know, as a transit advocate, I'd love to see a lot of this money be used flexibly, but we've gone way overboard in some areas, and I think we have to bring this back into reality and use the money that should be spent on highways, that could be spent on highways, to try and take care of the congestion problem. Because I have another study from ODOT here, and the ODOT study says, large increases in highway capacity will be needed to avoid growing congestion unless Oregonians agree to substantially reduce their personal mobility. Roadway projects in general have a net effect of reducing congestion. Oregon's increasing population, these are quotes, will cause major increases in congestion unless highway capacity is increased significantly, mobility is reduced significantly below present levels, or costs increase greatly. I mean, it seems to me that we have to put some constraints when the money comes in here that we spend it prudently.
Okay. Thank you. Is that it, Senator George?
I have some polling data and some other things indicating where we are relative to this whole concept.
Okay. When Senator Fisher comes in, we're going to break away and kick out his bill. That. Go ahead.
Thank you.
Okay.
And this is a question
that
I have right here. Mm-hmm. If you impose current law, the requirements of money you can't build, building, repairing, and maintaining the road time, which is only the majority, 89% said yes. That's what we have done.
Wait just a second. Here's Senator Fisher. Here's Senator Fisher. Be here just a minute. Thanks. Okay. Sure. Yes.
I'm going to be able to go there. I don't know how long you're going to go on this, but...
Well, Senator Fisher, we're about to lose our fourth vote. Would you mind?
I think everybody's agreed on the...
Sure, yes. Okay. I wouldn't ask you, Susan. Yes. Okay. Go ahead. Okay, I'm going to close the public hearing on Senate Bill, 757, and open a public hearing and possible work session on Senate Bill 652. Okay, thank you. Now, isn't there a state police or...
Yes, Madam Chair, I just wanted to make a brief statement. I'm Senator Bill Fisher, and I put this bill in and request of a towing company, and I believe that the state police, the towing industry, and their representatives are all in agreement, and I'm going to just back out of here and say that I would hope that you would support this bill and send it on its way. I think it's a good bill.
Just wait 1 second. Megan Palau, I forgot to ask you to explain the bill.
Yeah.
Oh, you did before. Right, that's right, when we heard it before. Okay, go ahead, officer. Will you stay close by, Senator Fisher?
Yeah, I will.
Okay.
Senator Shannon and members of the Senate Transportation Committee, my name is Kurt Allen Curtis, and I'm a sergeant of the Oregon State Police Patrol Services Division. Just like to add that we are in favor of Senate Bill 652 with the amended version of it, which puts in contracted with rather than hires, and then contracted tow areas with regards to the jurisdiction.
Is there only a dash one amendment?
As far as I know.
And that covers both. Does everybody have the dash one? Mm-hmm. Okay. Okay. All right. Okay, then do you want to give us a dash one, Senator, or somebody?
Well,
No, we didn't.
Well, you want me to just walk, tell us exactly? Oh, he just said what it did? Mm-hmm. He just did. Okay.
That's a little out of my
neighborhood. Okay, thanks. As long as it's not. And go ahead.
Al Elkins, Oregon Tow Truck Association. We support the Senate bill, and we thank Senator Fisher for bringing it forward.
Okay. Okay. Any questions? Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, I open a work session, a public hearing impossible, open a work session on Senate Bill 652. Somebody want to move
it? Yes, Sharon, move it.
Is there fiscal? It should be in there if there is.
No.
No, they weren't. Not one. Just the way the local. Sure.
I move Senate Bill 652 to the floor with a depassed recommendation.
Oh, wait, first, as an, oh,
we have to see the amendment. Yeah. Chair, I move dash one amendment to Senate Bill 652.
Is there discussion? Without objection.
Okay. Madam Chair, I move Senate Bill 652 as amended to the floor with a depassed recommendation.
Any discussion? The clerk will call the roll.
Senator Castillo?
Aye.
Senator George.
Aye.
He's right there. Right there.
Senator Reed.
Aye.
Chair Shannon.
Aye. It hasn't passed unanimously for those present. It goes to the floor. Senator Fisher, would you like to carry it?
I'm going
to
suggest that with my thanks, Madam Chair.
You're welcome. Thank you. This closes the work session on Senate Bill 652. See, we got through, you guys. Thanks. Okay. Now we're going back to a public hearing on Senate Bill 757.
Thank you, Madam Chair. We were trying to call back to Mike, and we can't find him.
Okay. All right.
And we wanted to take it up.
Yeah.
As Bob Winky pointed out, both the benefit savings plans that have several bills to deal with making tax efficient.
It's a
total ODOT budget. The fees are very relatively different. Well, you have to have a given time of $2.6 billion, right here, total ODOT revenue. You have to have your city, you have to pay tax. I just want to remind you, this is the formula. To this right here, we have 361 million with the total ODOT product, whose amount was actually getting out the cost to contractor payments for building and building roads. And of that number, we know a lot of that involves engine, bicycle paths, and stuff like that. As you can see, that's a small percentage of this right here. The 305 million is all out of the 1999-01 budget.
Okay, you're
trying to see. Of the maintenance dollars, only $46
million has to buy supplies to go out to fix the
roof.
Oh, maybe bill has a prior referral to Ways and Means. Wouldn't it be better if it goes to Ways and Means and St. George can make the presentation to Ways and Means? Folks, three of us are on Ways and Means already.
She would like them to see it. Because we're
I can maybe agree with you, but I would like to, to me, it would be good to have the transportation see these numbers.
But there are only two of us.
Okay.
Yeah.
Three of us.
Mm-hmm.
No. Well, we want Ways and Means to see it. That's where the impact is. And we need to pass it on.
Did you want to, what did you want to do right now? Do you want me to go ahead or stop?
She just said to me that Ways and Means should be seeing this. We need to educate Ways and Means.
Could we refer this bill to Ways and Means now, and then we'll hear your complete presentation?
Down there.
That would be fine with me. I think that might make sense, and that might be
I'll tell you what. There are other... No, but these other people have signed up to testify, and usually I let the people that oppose it testify. So we could let them, and then we could deal with the bill another time.
Then I think it would be really good to have at least a few more of these in order to have you, the three of us, understand what things they might raise. I think I can answer some of the questions. And if that's okay, I would like to go ahead and proceed with that.
Okay, would you like to...
Can't vote the ballot bill out today anyway.
No, I was just going to say, would you like to testify afterwards and clarify with their concerns?
Well, we could do that. How about I go through a few more?
Go ahead, sure. Okay.
Absolutely, do know. You have $887 million in the construction budget. The actually did get out $846 million. Of that, only $471 million got out to actually do anything, and that includes fixing the lights in the outhouse on that side. $300 million is harder to get out of the post project, and that includes everything, including bicycle paths and pedestrians and our walkways and building it. According to the contractors, about $200 million actually got out. To the actual figure discussion. In fact, the contractor that gave you this number indicated that he spent a lot of his time on stuff like guardrail and didn't actually do any road building. If you remember, he's lost 9.5 miles during this last 10 years. These are the numbers actually relative to what actually got out to the contractor. I mean, to our crews, which is in the maintenance budget again, going back and forth and getting some construction. And I just wanted to give you the final on that number so you know what the source was. You both will recognize this. There's a format on it. And this shows the amount of record construction, and interesting two numbers right here at the bottom. I'm going to pull them up a little bit. What it shows was that of the total construction budget, this amount right here is what got out to the buy-in. The total construction pavement, bridge, concrete, and everything, was only $193 million. Yes, think about it. That original number we got out there, relative to the total amount, there was no amount. And then here we have an interesting line of almost $100 million for change orders taken by the local. Off top, right? And as you just saw, how little is actually getting out for the project. And the $200 million number is not here because it is an estimate. So anyway, with that, I'll go ahead and stop.
I have quite a few
more
charges. These are the people who oppose.
Here,
what are the ones you need to call on? What's their position again?
Yeah,
five people. Thank you, Senator George. She is going to call on Chris Hager Barmer, Roger Martin, Lane Peterson to come up to the witness stand. She wants to call them.
Yeah.
I just call on Chris Hagen Farmer, Roger Martin, and Lynn Peterson.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Madam Chair, Senator George, thank you for the opportunity to testify. My name is Chris Hager-Bomer. I'm the Air and Transportation Program Director for the Oregon Environmental Council. We're the oldest statewide environmental advocacy organization in Oregon, and we work to restore and protect Oregon's clean air and water. OEC opposes Senate Bill 7057, which would force ODOT to spend all flexible federal funds on construction of new highways and bridges. T21 was passed and increased Oregon's allotment of federal funds by an average of 50% per year. What was Congress's intention? At an ICE reauthorization meeting in 1997, Congressman Schuster, who was chair of the House Transportation and Infrastructure Committee, said, and I quote, "Make no mistake about it, we face an infrastructure crisis in America. Our highways are crumbling, our bridges are falling down. So we face a daunting task here. However, it means that we have a golden opportunity, and that golden opportunity is to craft legislation that provides fair, efficient means for transportation and indeed provides the necessary funding to meet these needs." Unquote. Oregon, like every other state in the union, faces this infrastructure crisis. ODOT has told us again and again that one quarter of the state highway system is in very poor or poor condition. So, in our opinion, fiscal responsibility demands that we fix our crumbling roads and bridges before spending money on new capacity. Now, this does not mean that we don't think that there aren't some important modernization needs, but if you're going to prioritize, fixing the roads should come first. Now, SB 757 would instead take any flexible federal dollars, and to explain, when we send our federal tax dollars to the federal government, I'm sorry, the federal gas tax dollars, they come back, I think, in three different segments. One are dedicated to roads. Another segment is dedicated to transit, you know, the earmarked type projects. And the last is this flexible piece of the pie. And again, this bill would take all of that flexibleness and put it only into constructing new roads. So not only do we disagree with the purpose, we also believe that actually the state ought to repeal the current law that requires ODOT to spend at least $54 million a year on modernization, and we have introduced legislation to that effect. We basically don't think that the legislature should attach arbitrary dollar amounts to different categories of highway program expenditures. But basically, needs change, and we must have the flexibility to meet them when they do. The best way to meet the needs of everyone at the least cost to the taxpayer is to spend money on a variety of projects, not just new highways. In June 1998, Davis and Hibbetts conducted a survey in five rapidly growing counties, Washington, Clackamas, Marion, Deschutes, and Lane. 59% of the residents polled in these counties said that we should increase all kinds of public transportation and alternatives to automobile traffic as the solution to Oregon's transportation problems. In contrast, only 35% said that more and wider roads was the solution to our transportation problems. In summary, we oppose SB 757 because it offers a one-size-fits-all approach to Oregon's transportation woes. Thank you, and I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. Roger, go ahead.
I think I was the third one called. Okay. Madam Chairman, my name is Roger Martin. I'm the Executive Director of the Oregon Transit Association. I've distributed a copy of my statement, and for reasons that I'm not quite sure I can tell you, I seem to have had copies of a whole bunch of material from the City of Tualatin or the Tualatin Chamber of Commerce. I don't represent the Tualatin Chamber of Commerce, so I unburdened myself and gave you all those copies so I don't have to carry them around anymore. I want to talk directly about the bill, Madam Chairman. The Oregon Transit Association, which is made up of three dozen, more than three dozen various public entities and providers of senior and disabled transportation all around the state of Oregon, are opposed to this legislation because, and I want to speak specifically to the bill, I understand the frustrations of many people here about the inability to get projects funded, highway construction projects built around the state. I share that same frustration. But I don't think this is the solution. To take away all federal dollars for transit, I want to go back and give you a history that Senator Yee...
This is not all. Remember, she said a third.
Okay, what I'm talking about, Madam Chairman, are the federal dollars that come into us, and I'd like to give you a background.
We're going to talk about the flexible ones.
The flexible federal dollars.
Madam Chair, I don't think those dollars should be touched if we wanted to. They're already dedicated. This bill will have very little impact because of what T21 has, have almost no impact on transit. In fact, Madam Chair, if you think about this bill for a little bit, what does the bulk of transit run on? And that's roadway and roadway capacity. HOV lanes, that sort of thing, are a great benefit. And another issue relative to this is that the automobile is its most inefficient when it is parked or when it stops, doing stop and go. And environmentally, the rapid movement of automobiles is very friendly to the environment.
Yeah.
Another example, really quickly, if I could, is we were bragging the other day that we were moving 800 to 900 cars in Portland. At the same time, I was watching a videotape produced by 2020 on Southern California, where the same lane in California was moving 1,500 to 2,000 cars per hour. And so we need to make some changes that could even allow our existing roadways to carry the capacity that they could potentially carry.
Right.
But there's very, very, very limited amount of the money could actually be diverted. If Roger knows the exact number, I would appreciate it, because we've been having trouble to get that, to actually achieve that number.
Okay. Yeah, because I wouldn't want all federal funds to not seem to, you know, for...
Chair, I guess... We're at one of these points where I have a disagreement with Senator George as to what the effect of the bill will be, and maybe we have to get an attorney general's opinion. I don't need to get in a debate with any of you about what it does.
The bill says all transit dollars go to all federal funds.
It doesn't say that. What it does say, Madam Chairman, is
that would be a problem.
It would be used only for financing, and it goes through. Above it, it says where the FTP dollars will go.
What line is it, Roger?
Start with the lines, section 2, subsection 2. Sets this up and talks about where the available federal dollars go. It is our interpretation of it that the federal dollars, which previously have gone for some flexible public transportation projects, would in this case be dedicated only to highway construction.
It says it's meant all monies made available by the federal government for transportation purposes that will be used for highway construction without endangering receipts. It's the dollars that come for construction, not the dollars that come from transit.
Madam Chair, there are flexible funds that come from the federal government to the State Department. I do not deny that they could all be used for highway construction. Our objection is they should not be all used for highway construction.
Are you disagreeing with the previous testifier? Because she said
they come
in threes. They come all for highway transit amount, and then there is a flexible. Three streams.
I don't pretend to be the expert on how the federal funds flow through, and I think the Department of Transportation be the one.
Then we need an amendment, because I would only want the flexible, not what's earmarked for transit.
But not. But, Madam Chairman, that's the point I simply want to put on record. There are flexible funds that could be used either for construction or for transit. And I think the flexibility should remain here, and they should not all be dedicated to the use for construction. And the reason for that, and I'd like to just get it on the record, the reason for that is that this legislature historically has moved away from using as state funds. In 1983, the last general fund dollars were taken out of the budget for the use of transit. And I think, Senator, you may have served at that time on the Ways and Means Committee. Dan Simmons came to us and said, we have a crisis in state government. That was back in the early 80s. We don't have the funds. We're going to take away the capital to buy vans and other mini buses for the transit to all your handicaps. We'll restore it as soon as we can. That time has never come. We were directed, we in the transit community, seek the federal dollars to pay for this. We don't have the money in state government. And now this bill would say to us, or say to officially, now you can't use those flexible funds because we're going to dedicate them all to highways only.
And that's the point I want to make. I don't want to see that happen. I understand the desire to put more dollars in the road, into construction. I share that. But I think inadvertently or on purpose, and I don't know which, the bill would, in fact, impede the use of federal funds for transit as an alternative.
So you're saying there are, well, you know, Doc, say there are no transit funds that come from the federal government that we cannot touch, that they have to go to transit?
Those probably, those are not, I'm not talking about. I'm talking about the flexible dollars.
But they're still special. Okay, yeah, that's good. All right. I, that's what I intend is the flexible ones. Okay. What do you think about apportion?
Well, Madam Chairman,
we have a portion of the flexible for transit and a portion.
Well, that happens right now, Madam Chairman.
Okay, thank you.
Quick regular question. Would you support the portion, the part of the bill that says that a certain number of dollars should go into a construction account that in fact does have more than $54 million in it that would be for new construction? You've really got to remember that $2.6 billion and $54
million. I have, Madam Chairman, that's kind of out of my realm. I don't have any problem setting up a requirement to spend more money on construction if the money's available. My purpose in being here is to talk about don't take the rather small amount of federal dollars that goes to transit. And I know that many on this committee, when I say transit, think only of TriMet. I would hope you would think of the elderly and handicapped delivery system in 36 counties. And it has nothing to do with TriMet whatsoever. If you want to bang on TriMet, I'd urge you to invite Mr. Feeney back, who wanted me to be here this afternoon.
Did I say TriMet?
No, I did.
Okay. I'm not banging on TriMet. Okay. And I'm not after their designated federal dollars either. Okay, go ahead.
Chair Shannon and members of the committee, my name is Lynn Peterson, Transportation Advocate for 1,000 Friends of Oregon. As you know, 1,000 Friends of Oregon has 5,800 members across the state, and we advocate for good land use planning in and outside urban growth boundaries to preserve forests and farmland. I'm here to state that we strongly oppose Senate Bill 757 because it eliminates the flexibility of federal transportation funds and limits public debate on transportation funding decisions. There are 4 points I wish to make today. The first one is that SB 757 earmarks modernization funds. We all know that we are only at 77% fair or better condition on our highways, and things are getting worse. Even if we would get a gas tax increase, we wouldn't even be able to get past 77% because of the problems we're having are getting increasingly more expensive year by year just to preserve. 757 does not ensure increased benefits to Oregon citizens. I want to make this perfectly clear again that highways do not necessarily mean benefits in all the realms that you would normally think of, economic and
we're only talking about reducing congestion and helping the traffic move. We're not talking about benefits. Just in case you're making that.
I have 2 points on benefits, and one of them is congestion. It has been shown nationwide by the Texas Transportation Institute, which is not a nonprofit, which doesn't advocate for anything. And it just reports data. They did a study in 70 medium and large-sized cities throughout the nation, and they have shown that no matter how much more you invest in your highways between Dallas or, you know, Eugene, you have the exact same amount of delay per person out there on the highway. No matter how much more you spend.
Do you have that report?
It's on the web. You can get it. And I can get it to you also.
And I'm sure Lynn has. Do you have that information?
Yes, that's an absolute statement.
Okay, that's what I'd like to hear, but later. Let her finish.
Okay.
Okay. It's interesting that.
Okay, go ahead.
Have a debate. SB 757 also limits transportation options. I'd just like to point out that transit usage in the Portland area has increased faster than BMT in the area and increased faster than population growth, which shows that the money we're putting into transit and transit outside in the rural areas is being used and does need to be funded. I also would like to point out the bicycle use across the Hawthorne Bridge in the even is closed right now. but when it's open, it carries 2,000 bike trips a day, which is quite a lot. And when you combine all that together and you don't fund those options, you end up forcing people back into their cars, and we can't even imagine to try and have enough money in the state to provide enough capacity for all those cars. Senate Bill 757 also bypasses the democratic process, but still unfairly limits discussion and debate between citizens and the state to determine what each community needs. Without this dialogue, the state will be unable to adequately weigh the relative importance of maintenance, highway investments, and other transportation alternatives. And before I finish, I'd just like to say that Mr. Benke, when he was testifying, had some numbers, the chart on the metro numbers. I'd just like to clarify what he was talking about, because I believe he misrepresented the data. That chart shows 150% cut list, and that cut list is the $75.8 million that's available to the metro region, half more of that as a first cut. And then within the next week, they'll be doing another cut to get it down to the $75.8 million available. Right now, more than there's $40 million that can be spent on roads out of that 75.8. So more than half of it can be spent on roads, and more than that money that's available has already been put into roads. It's the road capacity project. Expanding or trying to increase capacity through the intelligent transportation system. So that money, even though it's flexible, so far has not been flexed and probably will not. So I just want to make that very clear that the money in the metro area, you know, against our wishes, is going to roads. Maybe that's something, you know, that's it.
The only thing, Lynn, is, and I don't want to comment on everything you say, but I see what you say roads, what you say this. It turns out to be bike paths, 8-foot sidewalks. It turns out to be all kinds of things, but yet it's called roads. And so,
well, when it's called road modernization, there's that 1% that's required by state law, which you know, but it doesn't go beyond that.
Okay, yes. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Lynn, you saw the poll that AAA did, and showing almost 90% of the people favor the existing system that dedicates our gas tax revenue to roads, bridges, and roadside rest areas. And yet I have a letter from 1,000 friends in my file saying that you wish to overturn the constitutional amendment and will work in every way you can to do that. How do you justify, when an overwhelming majority of the people favor something, to go ahead and attempt to overturn that?
I can't remember how many were in the survey, but I can give you just another survey of people in the metro area that said that they only want 35 cents of every dollar spent on vehicle use. So with every survey you give me, I can find another one that says that, in fact, they don't.
Okay, thanks. I want to get everybody before we go home, if I possibly can. Dave and Bill Penhall, why don't you come up? And Doug, are you still here? Well, I'd like to hear it today, if you don't mind. Thanks.
Hold on, what can
you
say?
Once you shut up, you don't have to time it.
Thank you,
Bill. We want to hear you.
Chair Shannon, members of the committee, I'm Doug Tindall, maintenance engineer from the Department of Transportation, here to speak to you today about Senate Bill 757. As we read Senate Bill 757, it directs federal funding to modernization projects, particularly the construction of modernization projects. Because it doesn't allow, appears not to allow, federal funding to be used on the design of those modernization projects or on the purchase of right-of-way for those modernization projects, we would have to divert dollars from safety projects, pavement preservation projects, bridge projects, and maintenance to fund the design and right-of-way
act. That is so outrageous. Doug, you saw the numbers up there. They have your administration. They have your 919 engineers. They have your 75 people in research and design. That would, none of these dollars would affect that. Look at the gaps that are in there. And tell me honestly, look me right in the eyes, tell me you think it would take away from that.
Chair Shannon, Senator George, I believe we would take money away from preservation projects, bridge projects, and maintenance to be able to do the design and to buy the right-of-way as prescribed under Senate Bill 757. Passage of Senate Bill 757 because it takes away from those programs, although we are in already not good shape, will result in declining pavement and bridge conditions, and it will require local funding for bridge inspections on local bridges. It will eliminate the flexibility of local governments to advance projects. In summary, in the interest of time, we have concerns about our priorities are improving the safety of the highway system, protecting the public's investment in roads and bridges, responding to local needs. Reducing and congestion and modernizing the system is our priority after those needs are met. We feel that Senate Bill 757 would limit our flexibility to address those priorities. Thank you.
Thank you. Go ahead, Phil.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Phil Finhollow, representing the Association of Oregon Counties. Considering the time of the day on Friday afternoon, I'm going to try to be brief. I want to focus on really two areas of the bill, the lines 10, 11, and 12, and related to that, 13, 14, 15, and then down line 28. Madam Chair, I'm going to limit my comments to the impacts that I see on county government. Lines 10, 11, and 12 indicate that all monies made available by the federal government for transportation purposes that may be used for highway construction shall be directed to this highway construction fund. And those funds will be used only to finance construction of new roads, new highways, new lanes, new bridges. Madam Chair, a portion of the funds that come to the federal government, the flexible funds that they've been talking about, the STP funds, the specific transportation funds, the HBRR, the Bridge Replacement and Rehabilitation Funds, are currently by agreement shared with cities and counties, with ODOT. We receive, counties receive something in the neighborhood of $7 million a year in these STP funds. These funds are used for a reconstruction primarily of county roads and the major preservation of those roads. My concern also in line 28 and 29 is that the monies that would go into this highway construction fund, projects would be chosen by the Oregon Transportation Commission. Again, we're concerned that it would take the flexibility away from the state to enter into these agreements with cities and counties to allow these funds to go for county projects and for bridge projects. Thank you, Madam Chair. I'd be happy. Senator George is shaking his head, so I'd be happy to respond to any questions if he
would. Well, I'm thinking about $7 million and $2.6 billion.
Well, $7 million, there's a larger fund here, and that's the bridge replacement program, which is about, I believe, $35 million a year. We have, through agreement with the Department of Transportation, established the bridge replacement program on, or in the process of establishing it on, jurisdictionally blind program. So the bridge that has the highest rating are the bridges that are funded under this program. And again, I'm afraid this would create some jeopardy for that program, at least from the standpoint of county and city bridges. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Yes.
Madam Chair and members of the committee, I am, I guess, last, so I better really be brief, or I'm in trouble with everyone. Quickly, it's wonderful to testify after my county colleague, Mr. Penhollow, because he does a wonderful job of raising city issues. Our issues are the same in terms of directly cities receive STP funds by agreements that we entered into with the department and have traditionally done so. And the issue with us is also that these funds are primarily used for reconstruction or preservation of road services rather than construction of new highways. In addition, we also participate in the jurisdictionally blind bridge program, which also would be impacted. Just one observation, too, in regards to the testimony regarding Dundee and the road facilities there. And I think that's just one example. We have incredible modernization needs around the state, without a doubt, and I think it's something we have to address, and with the cities we're committed to addressing. And you know, this bill creates a whole pot of dollars that become earmarked for new highways, new lanes, new bridges. Except that what it does, in essence, is take those funds away from some of the preservation and other work on the system. So I think it does create a sense of new dollars for modernization, but it does so at the expense primarily of preserving our existing facilities. We look forward to working and have been to try to increase funds so we can put more to doing modernization, but not at the expense of our preservation needs, which end up costing us more in the long run. With that, Madam Chair, I'd like to conclude my testimony, and I'll be happy to answer any questions. Thank you.
Questions? Okay, thank you. But you weren't the last, Dave.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm the panel.
Good, thank you very much, Dave. And Doug, I have more questions, too, just kind questions. I don't want you today, but I saw one that I wanted to ask you, and I don't see it right now, so I'll call you or something, okay? Because I found it. It said at the bottom, the next last paragraph on the first page, how would it change the state highway program? We estimate that it would redirect about $120 million to move. Okay, is that excuse my ignorance, but I need to ask. Is that $120 million what all that you estimate comes in flexible funds?
Chair Shannon, I believe that, excuse my ignorance.
Okay. All right.
I believe that 100, what we're talking about there is not the flexible funding, the flexible surface transportation program funds that are currently used for transit is about $3 million. Mm-hmm. I believe what this $120 million is talking about is redirecting projects where we had money going to preservation or to bridge projects or to safety projects that would not be modernization, that we would then redirect that federal money that was going to those projects to modernization projects.
Okay.
So do you know the dollars out of the $661 million of federal dollars in the new budget? How much of that could potentially go to this bill? Surely you guys have calculated that.
Chair Shannon, Senator George, I'm not positive I know the exact number of that. I know that of the 661...
Based on T21 agreements that exist.
Chair Shannon, Senator George, again, my understanding of this, and I'm not sure whether it includes that $3 million flexible SPP or not. That's what's not clear to me. But my understanding is that of the $661 million federal dollars, about $564 million go to highways, and the rest, which are almost all dedicated to other specific, we've talked about, the specific transit dedications and those things, the 96.6 that remains goes to those other dedicated programs. Did that
If we right now in this bill amended it and said we're going to lock in that $96 million, all the folks who were out here earlier should just go away, right? Because they would have had her guarantee that the same amount of money would be maintained.
Chair Shannon, Senator George, I think their concerns are on those dollars that are the SGP funds that are flexible, that are not the $96 million. I think their concerns are on
those.
I believe it's $3 million.
Just $3 million. $100 million.
I believe that's the number. Okay. I think they would also be concerned about taking money from the federal money for bridge repair maintenance type work that would now, because it's federal money available for highways.
We could move those, could we? What I was told by the feds was that those dollars are locked in. They actually specify you will do it.
I'm sure, Shannon, Senator George, those monies are locked in to do work on bridges. Now, you could spend those for modernizing bridges rather than repairing existing ones.
USDOT doesn't say, I want you to fix that bridge at a certain location. My understanding is that they actually specify a project if they think there's a problem, like on Interstate 5.
I'm sure, Shannon, Senator George, that may be the case in some events. I don't believe that's the case in every event. I think the locals would also be concerned, and I'm speaking for my good friends, Bill and David, but I believe they would also be concerned about the flexibility we have to allow them to get projects going, get local projects going earlier by providing them state funds for which we use them, use federal funds. So I think there would still, I think there may be, still be some concerns on their part. Certainly there would be some concerns on our part over the dollars that would be directed specifically to construction.
Madam Chair, one follow-up.
Okay,
Doug, we had, in your original budget that you folks presented to us, it wasn't $2.6 billion, it was $2.825 billion. Right now, in order to satisfy what might be a deficit, and I'm going to look forward to seeing the actual numbers from you folks, and we have asked for those, as to how this distribution will occur. But of that, that was borrowed money. It would be a very wise thing to do to during the interim, as this construction phase would begin, to go ahead and pull that money back if we needed to backfill $3 million or $96 million or maybe, you know, maybe $63 million. The total amount that was exchanged with cities and counties total was only $63 million. If you add all these together, you're about 20% of the total federal. So it doesn't look like it would be a major problem to backfill that. And since you folks proposed doing that, I would certainly support that.
Chair Shannon, Senator George, I guess I'm not familiar with the numbers you're talking about, but
okay. The first preliminary budget was $2.825
billion. Okay. Thank you, Doug.
Sure.
Mr. Zucker?
Is he again?
He would probably be four.
For the record, my name is Mel Zucker, Portland, Oregon. And first thing I'd like to say is that we've had a lot of confusing testimony about flexible funding and the money that comes from the Fed. And to clear this up, I've thought back to years ago when Hugo Black on the Supreme Court was being questioned about a topic, and he reached into his pocket and he pulled out a copy of the Constitution and looked at it, and they said, well, Justice Black, do you have to refer to the Constitution? He says, I always want to be sure. And so in the spirit of Justice Black, I've ordered for all the Transportation Committee members a pocket-sized booklet which explains the Transportation Equity Act for the 21st century, so you'll all have a very convenient reference. This business of flexibility is being misconstrued. There's flexibility within categories. It is not, but everything is not flexible. It is and it isn't. It's flexible, but it's flexible within certain kinds of categories. Certain things have to be used as such. And the money comes in categories which cannot be disturbed. There are vehicle safety programs, alcohol programs, automobile safety programs, transit programs, formula grants, transit benefits, welfare to work, on-the-job training, congestion mitigation and air quality, transportation enhancement, bike paths, scenic highways, and on and on. And there is some flexibility of some of the funds in some of those categories. Now, within STP, which has been referenced here, that surface transportation fund, there's a great deal more flexibility, but it's not that big a program for people to go nuts about. it'll help cure our highway situation. But
we're not asking for any flexibility.
We're not really raping anybody on diverting this. Now, we've heard that, oh, it's being used for these things. But if you really look at the last few Metro meetings, you'll see that Metro passed bills that will use $18 million for light rail to the airport, which won't go to a vote of the people. They will use I don't know how many millions the number is, of STP funds for this new North-North light rail line that was voted down several times by the people. So these are the ways that the funds are being used. And when I hear this business of, oh, well, it allows, you know, the people to get involved, it's bull. It allows, you know, certain interests to go around the people. The transit, you know, we forget, you know, too often this becomes a battle between transit and roads, but it isn't, because outside of the Portland metro area, 100% of the transit is on the roads. Within the Portland metro area, according to a 1995 study of Metro, 88% of all the trips were on the roads. Of transit trips. These are just transit. So transit depends on the roads. School buses depend on the roads. You know, so when you forsake the roads, you are killing your transit program. One thing you must be aware of is that people, in all the surveys, people are saying our roads are in pretty good condition. Portland, the City of Portland survey that came out in December of 98. Our roads are in good condition. Our problem is congestion. Everywhere they're saying the problem is congestion. And recently in the state of Washington, voters said, look, the legislature hasn't been doing anything, so we're going to take the matter into our own hands, and they put out Referendum 49, which required $2 billion of roads to be built. There was no money supporting it. The whole establishment was against it, and it got 68% of the vote. And so, if the legislature doesn't take care of congestion, the voters will. And then it'll look bad for the legislature. The bill... The reference to the TTI study couldn't be more off base. The TTI study, if anybody who wants to look at it, it's on the net, not only shows in statistical form that those that new roads have done a lot for congestion, but in one of their conclusions is that if you want to do something about congestion, build new roads.
I want to ask you a question. Do you have a copy of that initiative from Washington State?
Referendum49.com. Mm-hmm. Last time I looked, I don't know if it's still there.
It didn't raise taxes?
Oh, yeah.
I'm not familiar with the details. I know it's $2 billion, and it was going to be in $2 billion in new road programs.
Okay.
And it was on the, it, last time I looked, it was www.referendum49.com.
49. Okay.
49, right. Much is said about safety, but you're not going to do anything about safety without adding additional lane miles in the form of passing lanes, in the form of straightening out some of the roads.
Mr. Zucker, we agree, but all of that. But what about the bill? You know, that we do need more roads, we need more capacity.
We do need more capacity.
What about the bill? How does the bill be made? I know
the bill's our only chance, because right now nothing is going. I gave out an analysis at one time, and I'll make it available to the committee, of this term modernization that we use, which is so misleading because people automatically assume, oh, modernization must mean new roads. But there's so very little. I analyzed 4 years of it and pulled out all of the lane adding capacity projects, and I will make that available to the committee next week for sure.
That'd be wonderful.
Okay.
So we need it so we can really get to it.
We need it. We've got to, you know, do something because congestion is getting worse. Safety conditions are getting worse. And the things we are doing haven't solved the problem.
Okay. And, Doug, I need to ask you one more question. Thank you.
No question.
Yes.
No, you have an estimate based upon right now the agreements that have been reached in between the state, the counties, and the Congress of RT21. Do you have any idea how many dollars might actually come in to this new construction account?
I hate to hazard a guess, but we can pull it out because the website for T21 for the Fed has the allocation for each of the categories for each of the years of T21. So if you go into STP listed on that website, you can pull out the exact dollar allocation. Of course, it's nationwide, so you'd have to kind of divide it by 50 to get an average of what we'd be getting, you know, and so that would give you an idea. And then within the STP category, you have to look at how much of it is transferable.
Okay. Doug, well, helping a constituent recently dealing with the right-of-way problem, I found out that we have owned right-of-way to widen 99W since it was all bought up between 51 and 54. And we have owned the right-of-way to widen the road to the coast since the 30s. How much more right-of-way do we need? You brought that up in your speech, in your talk.
Chair Shannon, I think it depends on which section. I mean, we have to look at that specifically section by section. There are cases where, yeah, you're right. We bought the right-of-way a long time ago and we still own it. There are sections where we bought the right-of-way a long time ago and we sold it as part of the reduction of surplus property. And there are places where, as you go down a roadway, you will sometimes see fence lines a significant distance away from each side of the road edge. A lot of times fence lines are right-of-way. And then you'll come to an area where there'll be a business or there'll be the fence lines suddenly taper in and I'm not old enough to know why we didn't buy the right-of-way that wide all the way through there. So I can't tell. I mean, we could look at a specific piece of roadway and figure out how much right-of-way we'd have to buy, but it really varies. Clearly, you're right. There are places where we have enough right-of-way.
Yeah, it seems like right-of-way would be a problem when I see how much we own.
Chair Shannon, if you look at some of the interchanges, the improvement out here on I-5, for instance, we bought a whole bunch of right-of-way on that project. We didn't. That was an area where we did not have enough right-of-way to make the improvements that we made.
Okay. Chair, really quickly, Doug, what is the total cost? I mean, I have more comments about how long this project has taken. So the total number of years on all the improvements that have been made through Salem on Highway 5, what is the total cost and how much did we spend on the right-of-way?
Do you know that, John?
We can give you the total cost, I think. Chair, is that included South George? Chair Shannon, Senator George, $72 million is the total cost. I'm sorry, $172 was the total cost, but she circled it, she put a one there. And we'll get you the number on how much of that was right away.
All right, George Joan, you're good. You've been bandered around here. Somebody said 174 in 10 years, and you had it just like that. I am amazed.
Sometimes we remember.
Oh, you do. Did you say 172 then? And 10 years to do. No. And that was after it had been built. This is all the project. Not the building of I-5. Yes, just that she's next.
Okay. And Doug, you said you sold some. You bought some and you sold some. Why did you sell some and how much did you sell?
Chair Shannon, Senator Yee, I don't know what the number that we sold was. I can tell you that a number of years ago in the legislature, there was a great direction to ODOT to sell property that we weren't using in order to generate funds. And we can get you the number on how much surplus property we sold. I don't know what the number was, but I know that there was a direction that came from the legislature, 91, 93, that sort of time frame, maybe possibly earlier than that.
Well, Madam Chair, follow up. Well,
yes, follow up.
don't you have planning, design, and so forth? Once it's planned, you don't sell it anymore, do you?
Chair Shannon, Senator Yee, the sale of right-of-way is sometimes a contentious issue where if you have you may have a plan of what you'd like to do, and if you don't have funding, if someone wants that property for development, and you can't point to specific projects, there can be a lot of pressure brought to bear to sell that land. And so if you don't, just simply saying that we plan to use it sometime, someday, does not always seem to be enough defense to keep us from having to sell land.
Well, I like to see instances that you sell them. It just seems to me once you plan it, you've bought it right away, I don't see any reason you would sell it. So if you have instances that it happened, I'd like to know.
Sure, Shannon, Senator Yee, I'll try and get you some specifics.
Well, would one be the Mount Hood Freeway? I mean, when they decided to go light rail, they bought all of that. Did they sell any of it?
Chair Shannon, I believe most of the right-of-way on the Mount Hood Freeway has been sold now.
It's been sold. You know, we had a class to Portland, to Mount Hood. Then they chose to do that special light rail instead. So that's one that I would think of. Senator George, do you have a question for this man?
Well, I get it in minute, maybe outside of Doug's knowledge, but Doug, we have a couple of projects. We have four projects, I believe, that did have money that was going to come from coal, generating anywhere from 45 to 50% of the revenue flow. If we took 1/6 of the money that's in the federal dollars and just put into this account, and then you leverage that against the money that's going to be generated by the tolls, I mean, at least we could, on those projects, the one in Senator Duke's area, the one in the Portland area, and the one in the Tualatin area, and the one in Newburgh, we would at least be able to demonstrate to folks that we've done something.
You didn't say tolls, did you?
I said tolls. I know you didn't like tolls.
Thank you.
Okay. Tolls just for one or two of them.
We'll take a toll if we get away.
You can have a toll.
Chair Shannon, Senator George, it appears to me that what this bill intends to do is to direct, it seems to be calling to question the priorities that we've laid out in terms of preservation, safety, operations, and modernization. I guess, I'm not sure I understand your question exactly, but if you want, as a policy issue, the legislature would like to reprioritize what the department does with the money. I don't know that you could get any particular specific project, but it seems to me that that's what this bill attempts to do.
My thinking is it's trying to get the money in. I like that. At least finish the step. Get the money so we can at least do that before. But anyway, we're just talking. Yeah, you haven't said anything all night. Okay? I mean, Jay. Yeah.
You just got it. There, I don't always agree with them, but some of these folks have been saying exactly that for at least 2 years. They don't agree with ODOT's priorities. And that's it right there in a nutshell. And I can argue with them. You don't really get to, but I can argue with them. But that's exactly what they've been trying to tell ODOT for 2 years, is you're putting the money in the wrong place, and we don't agree with your priorities. And I think part of the battle between different sides is that ODOT has not understood that. And I have a question. I didn't take another swing at this because I'm still befuddled by the answer. I've gotten it twice, and I still don't understand it. I keep asking, how many projects do you have on the shelf? Because of all these projects we've tried over the years that we haven't gotten to for one reason or another. And the answer I keep getting is there aren't any. So let me get a little more specific. After 30 years and almost $2 million on the Astoria bypass, is there no plan sitting someplace in some engineer's office?
Chair Shannon, Senator Dukes, I think it's one of those sort of complex questions to answer. It's probably why the answer is a little puzzling. The answer to the question, if you ask me as an engineer, and I have the pencil in my pocket to prove that, do we have any plans on the shelf? What I call the shelf means a set of plans that has been what's called plan specs and estimates, the term we use is PS&E. Do we have any of those today on the shelf? No. However, And it's not like we've been wasting our time. Well, I mean, completed project plans that you could just grab and let out to handle a contract since they bid on this.
Right.
There aren't any completed plan specs and estimates that are out there today. Now,
that's
there are
a little model of the Astoria bypass that's sat in the library for a few months. You guys got that back.
Chair Shannon, Senator Duke, what I was going to add to that is that while there are no completed plans, specs, and estimates that you could simply, again, reach back, and that's what the engineer term of on the shelf means, reach back and handle a contract and say bid on these. There are sheets of plans that have been developed on a number of projects. I don't know how many on the Astoria bypass. This is not stuff that has to be redone. It's stuff that needs to be, you need to update it in terms of when you go to a project that you've done work on in the past and you put away. You bring that project back out, you need to go and you need to make sure that federal standards haven't changed or the standards haven't changed. You need to make sure that the environmental, all the environmental documentation is still correct. You need to make sure that all your estimates are right. You need to make sure that the materials you're calling out are according to current specifications. There's a number of things. You need to make sure that of whatever new connections have been put in, that all of what you're planning on doing will fit. So that's why the answer that comes back to you from an engineer is, no, there's nothing on the shelf. And why I can understand your frustration of saying, well, how can you do all that work and have nothing on the shelf? There's stuff in the file cabinet, okay? It hasn't made it to the shelf yet, but it's in the file cabinet and it's usable. Let me try it this way.
I've been involved in this one for about 12 or 13 years. And I've seen the math. I thought I'd seen the plans. I've seen the model. I've seen, you know. And it seems to me we ought to be able to go out to bid really soon, assuming we ever get the money. But you're telling me
sure,
about this.
Sure, Shannon, Senator Duke, let me try it this way. If we had never done any work on the Astoria bypass, never, and we started today and said, here's the money, go build the Astoria bypass, there would be a tremendous amount of work that would have to be done in design. But we've already done work on the Astoria bypass. So if you tell us today, go out and build the Astoria bypass, there's going to be a whole lot less that we have to do than we would have had to have done before.
But by putting these projects off, for whatever reason, we do maintenance, we didn't have money, whatever, we've increased the amount of time that it's going to take to get them to construction because you're going to go back. I don't know if you need how many you need a new EIS on because the old one is more than 2 or 3 years old, and I assume we'll send another set of surveyors out, and I assume that we're doing those basic kinds of things again for all of those projects, right?
Chair Shannon, Senator Duke, I don't know that we'd send a survey crew. I don't know where they are on the Astoria bypass. Another project.
Now, his Newburgh bypass, which has been hanging around for a while since the 50s.
I know that there are projects that are close enough that you wouldn't have to send a survey crew back out.
Well,
the matter of making sure that everything's up to date and making sure you have the permits and you're ready.
Can you give me and I understand, a wild guess as the dollar amount on those projects?
Chair Shannon, Senator Duke said, no, I wouldn't have any.
$100 million, $3 billion?
I have no idea what's in the file cabinet.
Okay, after committee closed first shutdown, we can have a public hearing on that Astoria bypass and get it all out.
Okay.
After our committee shutdown, we'll have a task force. Okay, we're going to close you up.
Yes, really quickly, Madam Chair, because this came up a couple of times today. But Doug, in the STIP, are there any projects in the STIP that are not state projects?
Chair Shannon, Senator George, I've been out of the STIP process for a while, but I believe that the local projects are included in the STIP. I think the federal government requires that. So, they would be local.
So the $414 million is going to be paid for by transit districts?
Chair Shannon, Senator George, I don't think there's transit district money in the STIP.
Oh, yeah. Back to the STIP.
I got some nods back there. That's your question. Okay. So,
I'm sorry. Chair Shannon, just for the record, can I correct myself? I'm sorry. Senator George, yes.
Thank you. This closes the public hearing on Senate Bill 757. And is no business to come before the party? We are adjourned.
Okay. Thank you, Megan.